Well, hello to you out there. Welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. Glad to have you with us on this very busy Monday morning here in the city as we listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. Glad to have you along with us today. Today, some very interesting, timely subjects to send your way. Yes, indeed. If you're a fan of history, even if you're not, we can always learn. I learn all of the time. Mm-hmm. But if you follow the succession of the line of succession to the throne of England, there were complications over this. I mean, it's very clear cut now. If something would happen to the Queen, it would be Prince Charles, and then it would be Prince Charles' eldest son, and then it would be his eldest son after that. The line of succession is fairly well patterned out, I would think. Not necessarily always the case. With us to tell us about their new show, Mary Stuart, going on at the, just about to open, I would say. In fact, it opens Thursday, January 23rd at the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater, just down the street from us, 3614 Main. With us to tell us all about this is Karen Paisley, one of the co-founders, in fact, both of the co-founders are here right now. One of the co-founders of the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater is with us. She's also the artistic director of the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater. And with her is Bob Paisley. Bob is, I don't know, what title do you have besides actor in the show?
Just an actor.
Just
an actor. That's all I do.
Okay. That's all you do. Okay.
Hey, Bob, can you do this, please?
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, that's the title.
Glad to have both of you with us today. The show is called Mary Stuart. Mm-hmm. If you think back on history, two queens, one kingdom, who will get the crown? Now, don't cheat now. Mm-hmm. You can go get a history book. You can go online probably and look this up and get the answer. But that would ruin the whole interview and the show,
yeah,
which they want you to see. Karen plays one of these queens.
Yeah, I'm playing Mary Stuart, and Cheryl Weaver is playing Elizabeth I. And there are several other historical figures represented who are actual, real people. William Cecil, who is Lord Burghley. Bob plays Lord Leicester, Robert Dudley, who is... the famous love affair, actually, between Elizabeth and Robert Dudley. And then there's Talbot, who's played by Alan Tilson, Lord Aubespine, Kevin Albert. And so a lot of these people are actual historical figures. The play, our play, by Peter Oswald, is the adaptation of the Schiller original that was written back in the 1800s. And, of course, the play imagines a meeting that never actually took place historically. Historically, Mary, who is 9 years younger than Elizabeth, who was born in Scotland, and then when she's 5 years old, she goes off to France because she's betrothed to the Dauphin and she's going to become the Queen of France, which she does. Elizabeth, of course, for those of us who are a lot more familiar, really, with British history, there's Henry VIII and his interesting love life that leads to, his children, but also the creation of the Church of England and all of that. And through all of that fruit basket turnover, and actually more like heads rolling.
Heads will roll, yes.
With Henry, out of that fray survives Elizabeth I. Who was actually his second child by his second wife, Anne Boleyn. During this time, historically, there's huge upheaval because we have the Catholic Church, which was the only church when Henry came to the throne, and then he wanted to marry Anne, so he decided he'd make his own church. So he could change the rules.
They can do that.
Basically, he just said, this isn't working for me. I need a new choice. And then created this stuff. But a lot of people really still felt, because this was very recent at the time, that this is not really a legitimate thing. So Elizabeth lived under this cloud throughout her entire life of whether or not the throne was actually really supposed to be hers.
Hmm.
Because when you looked at the actual... lineage. Uh-huh. Henry has a sister. He had a brother and he had a sister, an older brother and a younger sister. His younger sister's child was Mary's mother. And then, so Mary is actually descended from the same tree, you see?
Uh-huh.
So these are cousins, Elizabeth I and Mary Stuart.
Okay. They were full-blooded cousins.
Full-blooded cousins. Yeah. This is a real family. Though they never met because Mary's grandmother gets shipped off, you know, to go marry somebody else in another country. And then Elizabeth grows up only in England. She never actually left England at any time in her life. Mary was born in Scotland and then goes to France, where she lives from the time she's five until she's 17. And then she comes back to Scotland. And when the play begins, it's actually the play Mary Stuart is about the last 3 days of the life of Mary Stuart in the imagination of the playwright.
Uh-huh.
Because actually the two women never met. Mary tried to get Elizabeth to agree to meet her for decades, even before there was a problem between them. The real issue was that I think when Mary was 15 years old and the wife of the King of France, they were really both teenagers. He was only 13. The higher-ups' powers, the regents, recognized that was the moment when Elizabeth came to the throne, that they could dispute it because they actually had in their keeping Mary Stuart, who was also of the direct line, straight down the tree without any of this question about Protestantism versus Catholicism, etc. So the lineage from their opinion was this is the direct heir, not Elizabeth.
Sure.
So they created this coat of arms, and they took the coat of arms in France and said, we have the Queen of England and Mary Stuart. And at that time, Mary was just a teenager. And Elizabeth actually wrote a wonderful, very generous letter saying, I understand that the King and Queen of Scotland are not actually responsible for this affront, that they are only young people. They didn't actually do this. But she was strongly advising, we need to stop doing this. But of course, by this time, it was done.
Sure.
And then history goes forward. And then finally, and of course, Mary wasn't altogether a perfect person. She had some interesting choices that she made along the way in her less than perfect judgment. Though I think when we factor in her youth, the fact that she had grown up in an extremely liberal court. It was party court, okay?
I see.
The French court was big-time party court.
Okay. Well, and, that sort of makes sense.
Yeah. And she's brought up very strictly, but then she goes home to Scotland. Her husband dies, the young king of France. In all my reading, it turned out I found two accounts of what they think may have killed him, either an ear infection that then migrated into the brain, or perhaps a brain tumor.
Hmm.
And, of course, she actually, they were more like friends than husband and wife, really. But she loved him, and I think it was devastating for her when she lost him. And she also just lost her mother at that
sure.
point.
How different would history have been? We're just speculating now. I'm sure you've thought about it. Mm-hmm. And it turned out the other way.
Who can figure? I mean, it's Elizabeth was such an extraordinary person. Her education was extraordinary. Her lineage was extraordinary. The whole circumstances surrounding her life and her young age. While Mary was growing up in France, the darling of the court, which she really was. She was kind of like, you know, queen of the prom there. Elizabeth was being buffeted back and forth. Are you royal? Are you not? Her father had her sent away from court. Her mother gets beheaded, which is certainly a traumatic event. Then her sister comes to power, that we refer to as Bloody Mary, which is a good point to make. Mary, Queen of Scots, is not Bloody Mary. These are not the same person, which is what I thought for when I was a teenager. Bloody Mary comes to the throne. She takes everything back to Catholicism because she wants to restore the religion that is her faith and her mother's faith, Henry's first wife. And so she's the person who persecutes, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people.
Sure.
But among those people, she also kind of persecuted her sister Elizabeth and had her locked up. Elizabeth was accused of treason. She spent time in the Tower. She didn't know from day to day who she could trust, what was going to happen. And then And she became very good at managing really high stress situations politically by being extremely astute about what she said, did, wrote, because she understood she had to be extremely careful. So she tended to not respond off the cuff emotionally, because she had learned that there could be tremendous penalties for things like that. The flip of it is that Mary was an extremely emotional person. She tended to respond to people that way, both with extreme kindness, which was part of the reason she was very charismatic, that she loved people and they tended to love her back. And she was very warm, which is why when she was in trouble, so many times people rescued her, because they actually liked her a lot. But Elizabeth came to the throne at 24 after Mary's death. And by the time we meet these two women in the play, Mary Stuart has been imprisoned by Elizabeth for, I think, 19 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. Because when she's 26, by this time she's made some extremely bad decisions. And she has to flee Scotland because the nobles in Scotland are trying to kill her. So she flees to England for sanctuary, thinking that her cousin Elizabeth will protect her and then help her get back to France or wherever else she can go from there. Elizabeth doesn't see it that way. She considers Mary an extreme threat, because now the other heir to the throne is on English soil. So all of a sudden, on her doorstep is what she perceives as the biggest threat to her throne.
Yeah.
But Mary never saw herself quite that way. I don't, at least not, I think by the time she was in her mid-20s, I think she maybe dreamed of being the heir, that Elizabeth didn't have an heir, so the logical person to name as heir was Mary. But Elizabeth actually never named her heir to the throne until very near the end of her reign. And then when she did name the heir to the throne, it went to Mary Stuart's son, which I think is one of the supremest ironies.
Yes, yeah, that they would pass that back.
That ultimately, yeah, she did acknowledge Mary's right, because she gave the throne to James of Scotland.
Yeah. Kind of a complicated storyline.
It is a complicated storyline.
But it makes it a little easier to
yeah,
hear your
so story. So that's the backstory.
Really? That's easier to understand
now? Well, it's funny, yeah, like, yes, reading all this stuff, it was like, I had to go back and look at all these family trees to sort of sort this thing out. Uh-huh. But the bottom line is, it's about misunderstanding and family, and it's about politics.
Yeah, sounds like it would be.
Big time
yeah,
politics, because there are people pushing Elizabeth to execute Mary, and they were pushing her to execute Mary for 19 years. And then in the play, finally the two women meet, and then things happen.
Yeah, no, this didn't happen in reality. Yeah. So I guess they would consider that too volatile if the two of them would have met.
Well, it also, and they talk about this in the play, that in theory, you know, the common practice was, if you actually were presented to a monarch, by the time you're presented to a monarch, if you have been condemned to death, the outcome of that would be a pardon.
Oh, okay.
Because if that did not happen, then the monarch would be just the world's most horrible person. You were already condemned and they brought you to me and I condemned you again. That's just how cruel. So usually if you were brought up for pardon and you are actually brought to the monarch face to face, the outcome of that would be implied that a pardon is forthcoming.
Okay.
So that's one of the reasons they really, the politicians wanted to keep them apart too.
Sure.
Well, Elizabeth's politicians anyway. Mary didn't really have anybody lobbying for her from her cell, but she had people lobbying for her internationally, the Pope, the King of Spain, James I, once he became King of Scotland, other politicians. And in part, I think those very powerful friends and Elizabeth's own awareness that Mary was her cousin kept her alive.
But within the show, the context of the show written by Oswald, they did meet. I guess he wanted that to happen to center some things out.
And remember now, this play was written in 1800.
Okay.
Friedrich von Schiller, the original playwright who came up with the story. So he's writing about events that are still like 100 years, 200 years in front of him. but he wanted to examine this relationship between these women. And Schiller was like the Shakespeare of his time. He's still regarded as the kind of German playwright that they respect with the same honors that the English-speaking world reserved for Shakespeare. And so Oswald, who is a British playwright, he's younger than we are, who has stepped up and done this particular rewrite, first originated in 2005 at a very small company in London, England, and it got picked up and transferred to another little theater, and then the next it got picked up again by a much bigger theater, and two venerable British actresses took on the roles and transferred it to Broadway in early, well, in 2009. Uh-huh. And won several Tony Awards with this. The interesting thing that Oswald's been able to do with the translation is to make it much more accessible to people's ears. The other translations that we have seen, and I know people who are reading it in the original German, but the other translations, the English translations of this, are really hard to follow. It's chunky and it's forced and it's too formal and things. But there's a real accessibility with this particular translation that, and we're not trying to do anything spectacular with the accents. We're not all trying to be the British and Scottish and French and all these other things, but. And our design concept is pretty striking, I would say, to say the least, Karen.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it is.
We have an interesting cast here. Okay. Karen, of course, is Mary Stuart. Cheryl Weaver plays the role of Elizabeth. See, I can imagine these two having differences. I know them both. I can imagine. But you both have some fun with that as well. Bob plays at Dudley, the Earl of Leicester. How does he fit into this?
Robert Dudley, the Earl of Leicester, was considered the Queen's favorite. He was the Elizabeth was the Virgin Queen. She never married anybody.
I don't know that
she didn't have any children.
I don't know that I buy I'll let it go.
She never married anybody. But the one who came closest, the one who was toyed along with for the longest, was Dudley. Here's another place where we're not letting the facts get in the way of a good story.
Sure.
Yes, there was a connection between Dudley and Mary Stuart in their very early lives, somewhere between France and Scotland. Mm-hmm. They were linked as part of maybe of an arranged marriage or something, but it never happened, and it went on to evolve the way it normally evolves. So, but Schiller, back in 1800, decided he wanted to spice it up a little bit. So he has made the Earl of Leicester, Robert Dudley, be torn between these two queens.
Sure, sure.
One's got the power and one's got the passion. And how do you choose between the two? And where do your allegiances lie? And how do you save your own skin when everything is falling apart? People are losing their heads all around you.
The well-known Robert Gibby Brand plays the role of Lord Burley. I'm sure he has all this straight. If there's ever any questions at rehearsal, he probably knows all this.
Yeah. He knows exactly. He knows the timeline. He knows what was going on in the world of music at that time.
Well, yeah, it's so funny. Like, there's so many things that have been so interesting about this. We were talking about this at rehearsal one day, that part of what's really, really fun about working in theater is you don't know about a topic, and then you're doing the play, so all of a sudden you learn a great deal about this topic because you need to know it. And then as you continue growing in the role and working on the rehearsals and all these things, you begin to go, oh, I see so much more here, so many more things about this that I didn't realize that are really interesting. This is 1587 when this is happening, okay? Well, 1587 is also about the same time that the Lost Colony is founded on the coast of North Carolina, on the Outer Banks, that Elizabeth had, they actually got there like with soldiers in 1584. But 1587, I think, is when the colonists themselves actually leave England. Well, shortly thereafter, Philip II from Spain sails with the Armada, that big battle that became the deciding factor. So it's this whole really giant period of history that's boiled down into this little time, 3 days. But when you kind of think about, okay, what's really going on? And I realized yesterday when Elizabeth was doing lines during tech rehearsal, she has a line that says, now that the world's eyes are elsewhere. And I was thinking about that line. I thought, what does she mean? And I thought, oh, Philip II. Right. We're all looking to, we're concerned about war coming from Spain. And we're also looking at the new world. And we're excited about these things. So while Mary used to be on the front page, she is not so much on the front page now because there are other more exciting things going on. Hence, executing her during these 3 days when nobody's looking would be an easier thing to do.
Oh.
And the big, of course, the big dramatic question was, did Elizabeth know that this execution was going to take place or not? Because she actually had people locked up for doing it. She claimed after it was done that she did not actually intend for that to occur.
When? What did she know and when did she know?
And when did she know it?
The
exactly.
Classic question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Aside from the ones we've already mentioned, Kevin Albert as Count
Aubespine.
Yeah. I bet he's good in that part.
Yeah, and he plays a second role too. Some people are double cast in the show, and Kevin's one of them.
And Alan Tilson plays the role of George Talbot.
Mm-hmm.
So many of these names here, I know. I hate to mention some and not the others, but
It's a grand cast. Yeah, it's a lot of guys in this cast. There's only the three women, and there's like 10 guys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess the politics of that era being what it was.
Well, and I think that in terms of the plot of the play, like, why come see it now? Well, one, because it's fun. Two, it's a little bit sexy melodrama with a political overtone.
Uh-huh.
There's also stage combat things that are fun. Because you get into this idea of this group of people trying to free Mary even now at the last ditch. And what would that be like? Mm. And of course, then that makes the situation actually worse for Mary. Because if she thinks that they're just trying to free her, well, breaking somebody out of jail is not such a big deal. If you decide that you're going to also kill the queen in the process of breaking somebody out of jail, that would be a big deal for the person that was being broken out of jail. That could really kind of create problems for them.
Yes.
And so there's a whole lot of stuff like that. Mm. And it's complex. It's kind of like a soap opera.
Sounds like it. It really does.
Yeah, with fancy dresses.
Now, who do you want to credit?
Erica Sword is costume designer. Mark Manley, our props designer, has done amazing work. I mean, finding there's a lot of passing of letters, you know, back and forth between people. And Mark has found the copies of the original letters. So what we're handling on stage are copies of what was actually the historical document. One of the ones I found the other day was Mary's last letter that she wrote the night before she was killed. And it's extraordinary to read these things. And then I also have a props master who's creating them. So when you open it up on stage, you're actually looking at the names of the people who signed her execution warrant, which is the document they hand me first in the first scene. And we were looking all over for the list, like, who are these judges? Who were these guys? Because we had the Declaration of Independence. We could find that. And finally, like 4 days ago, we found that list online with a lot more research. So it's really been amazing. So that's Mark doing that. Derek Boyd is doing lights. Erica's costumes, mine have been made. Elizabeth's have been made. Cindy's have been made. Cindy Cyphers is playing the one other female role, Hannah, who was one of the servants based on Lady Kennedy, who was with Mary the entire time that she was in prison and never left her. And even the day she was executed, they wanted, of course, to do this kind of really fast, and nobody much knows, but there was an audience for like 300 or 400 people for this execution. Of wow. Nobles and people invited to watch.
I guess that was considered a big deal.
A very big deal, yeah. And they were concerned that that they were making a martyr, which actually they did. And they weren't going to let her have anybody with her. And then at the last minute, Mary lobbied and got, I think, six of her servants admitted into that room so there would be people for her there. And Hannah Kennedy actually went all the way to the block with her. Yeah.
Yeah, very, a very interesting show. Opens this Thursday, January 22nd, runs for, I guess, 3 weekends, essentially, mm-hmm. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, then the next weekend, the 28th, Wednesday, the 28th, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, a Sunday afternoon matinee mm-hmm. at 2 o'clock p.m., then the third weekend, Wednesday, the 4th, then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, another Sunday afternoon matinee on the 8th of Are we into February now? We're into February.
Isn't that hard to believe?
it's going to be the first quarter of the year over, and we just started. At the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater, located at 3614 Main. The number to call for more information, 816-569-3226, or online at metkc.org. If you need a MapQuest, 3614 Main, 64111 is the zip code. If you put zip codes into the MapQuest, it gets you right there. Just for anywhere in town. I want to thank you both for coming. Thank you for the lesson.
No, sorry.
No.
Drop by our place tonight.
Oh, yeah, Stone Soup Supper.
Stone Soup Supper tonight.
Oh, really?
From 5:30 on to 5:30, 7:30. Come on, have some soup with everybody, then stick around and have a chat.
Right. I have 3 gallons of gumbo.
Yeah. Come on, kind of
sure. Well, it's two queens, one kingdom. Who will get the crown? If you haven't been paying attention, and don't cheat by looking it up.
Oh, yeah.
Although you might be able to guess. I don't know. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Michael.
Karen Faisley, one of the co-founders and the artistic director, as well as performing the role of Mary Stewart at the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater's play Mary Stewart. And Bob Paisley, he plays the role of Dudley, Earl of Leicester. When I think of Dudley, I think of Leave It to Beaver.
I know.
Sorry, though.
I definitely call him the Earl.
The Earl of Leicester, as well as a fine supporting cast of names I know. You'll enjoy them in the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater's production of Mary Stewart, opening this Thursday, the 22nd, 7:30 p.m., and don't forget their Stone Supper tonight at 3614.
Yep, at the theater.
Yeah. Did they even need to call? Or should they just show?
Just show on up.
Just show on up. Say hi. Get a further explanation
yes.
of all this. Thank both of you. Thanks so much for being with us. Monday's hard, I know that. When we return, much more for you on the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM.
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. After taking a cinematic breather by making the lightweight musical Jersey Boys, director Clint Eastwood returns to heavier territory with American Sniper, the true story of Chris Kyle, the U.S. Navy SEAL rifleman who was credited with over 160 kills in Iraq. Bradley Cooper plays Kyle, a Texas good old boy whose undying patriotism motivated him to become the best sharpshooter the Navy ever produced. As portrayed by Cooper, Kyle was a man who kept his emotions to himself. The movie's atmosphere is a fitting reflection of this emotional repression. That air of unaffected restraint, however, is both a strength and a weakness. While austere, American Sniper is a fitting tribute to Kyle, as well as a thoughtful depiction of the dehumanizing nature of war. Foxcatcher is yet another chilling true story. Steve Carell plays John DuPont, the paranoid schizophrenic millionaire who established an Olympic training facility only to wind up murdering one of the coaches he had hired. Channing Tatum plays Mark Schultz, an Olympic gold medalist who trained at the facility, and Mark Ruffalo plays his older brother Dave, the ill-fated coach. The actors acquit themselves nicely, giving convincing and nuanced performances, but Bennett Miller, the director, gives us very little insight into DuPont's madness, and as a result, Foxcatcher is as frustrating as it is intriguing. Also opening this week, Kevin Hart plays a best man for hire in the bromance comedy The Wedding Ringer. Black Hat stars Chris Hemsworth and Viola Davis in a thriller about high-level cybercrime. Paddington is a family flick based on the famous children's books about a Peruvian bear's adventures in Britain, and The Search for General So is a documentary that attempts to solve the mystery of the person behind the famous Chinese culinary favorite. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM. Freeze Frame!
Pair Excellence, Dining on the Danube, is the first in a series of dining experiences.
On next Wednesday's All Souls Forum, we'll hear Jeff Mittman from the Missouri ACLU telling you what you need to know when you're stopped by law.
Coupled with five of Kansas City beer company's Bavarian Lagers. Dining on the Danube will be Saturday, January 31st in the Vienna Zimmer, Grunauer's private dining room. First course served at 7 p.m., the live violin of Katie Benyo will set the mood, and the chef and head brewer will be on hand to illuminate the pairings. Full menu and tickets at kkfi.org/events.
Lots of events going on at KKFI. I hope you can join us for some of those as well. All goes to help support community radio KKFI and the people that partner up with us as well. So welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Let's take a little dip. We're gonna move away from the historical dramas. You know, let's... Heads will roll in those days. We all know that. Things are pretty cutthroat when you're talking about the who will get the crown of England. Today it's real clear cut, but as Karen explained, it was not so clear cut in those days, especially when there were cousins involved and all of that. So very interesting discussion. Now we're going to have something a little more fun. This is a comedy ride.
Yes, it is. No kings, no queens.
That's right. No kings, no queens, but plenty of bridesmaids.
Plenty of, yes.
The Chestnut Fine Arts Theater is presenting Always a Bridesmaid. It opens January 22nd. Boy, that's, is that Wednesday?
No, Thursday. We open on Thursday.
They open on Thursday, and it will run through March 8th at the Chestnut Fine Arts Center, 234 North Chestnut Street in Olathe, Kansas. The number to call for more information, 913-764-2121. With us to tell us all about it, it's getting, well, a lot, most weddings take place in the spring, don't they? But you're getting a little head start. Are you, Shelley Stewart Banks is the director. She's with us, and a bride within the last year, I've noticed.
Yes.
Facebook gives that away, you know.
Yes, that's true. I did the most unthought of thing and got married.
I didn't think that was a thing I was ever going to do.
So you moved out of this bridesmaids category.
Yeah, I didn't actually have a bridesmaid. I had a tiny, tiny wedding on a deck in Colorado.
Well, that sounds
fantastic.
Like, it sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Now, how does that play into your direct? Did you know you were going to direct this show when you got married last spring?
Oh, I don't remember. No, I don't think so.
So you didn't pick it for that particular reason?
No, right? Brad read it and said, this is your wheelhouse, so come. It's, you know, Chickapalooza comedy.
That's right.
Women being silly, costume shenanigans, and I was like, yeah, okay, I'm in.
Sounds like fun. Val Fagan is with us as well.
Yes.
Credits too numerous. You've worked on Broadway.
I worked on Broadway opposite B.B. Newworth and Nathan Lane. I was in The Addams Family, which is a comedy, so I'm used to, you know, getting a laugh. That was about 2 years ago, I think. Yeah. And ever since then, I did Patsy Cline for Brad last year. So, and that's where Shelley and I met. And I knew she was going to direct this. So I kind of approached her and was like, could I be in your play, Shelley? And she let me do it.
Yes. All good people. She's funny.
Yeah, exactly.
Sign her up. No, I knew it was going to be fun, too.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet so. Now, it's a lot of several bridesmaids. I saw the picture. Stasha Case, the Pizza
Hilarious.
Street girl, if you watch the commercials.
Everybody knows that. She must look gorgeous in that.
I know. Everyone's like,
you haven't seen it?
I haven't seen it. No. I'm looking for it.
It's on a lot on some of the stages. During sports, it's on a lot.
Oh, but that's why I haven't seen it. I only watch MeTV. Oh. That's what I watch. Old Leave It to Beaver episodes.
You know, with people of our generation, and I don't mean, maybe I shouldn't include you, but
exactly.
That really fits. MeTV really
does. MeTV. I've learned more about catheters than any other place. MeTV.
Yeah. It's television of the 50s, 60s, 70s.
70s. Of course, I watch Bionic Woman, and I'm like, oh, it's the Bionic Woman.
That's
the
right.
The other night, Heart to Heart. Was
Heart to Heart.
Heart to Heart. When they got together, it
Six
was
Million
murder.
Dollar Man. I love him.
Yeah, this is my childhood.
Exactly. So that is basically the age range of all the women in the show, too.
Yeah.
I'd say.
Yeah.
So they're all friends, Shelley, and one of them is getting married?
Well, it's a series of them are getting married. There are
four women who have been friends since they were in elementary school, all through, you know, high school. They've known each other forever. And they vow in high school to always be bridesmaids in each other's weddings.
Oh.
And they don't realize at the time that that's going to be a lifelong thing, because one of them is on her third marriage and one of them has never gotten married and decides maybe she will. And there's several weddings involved.
I think you should be off the hook by the time the third one comes around.
Well, that's what some of them say think that, as well. Yes. That, like, I didn't realize this is going to be a lifelong commitment, you know. So, and sometimes they don't get a lot of notice that the wedding is happening, or they are left to their own devices to come up with their own wedding attire. And so comedy ensues.
Yeah, we need you on this deck in Colorado really quick.
Yes. Dress warm. Be there at 2.
That's right. Well, let's nail down some of these characters. What's Val's character? It just says Val actress on my notes.
Val actress, just generic. Just wind her up and put her on stage.
Tell me about your character.
I'd say my character's Libby Ruth. I was just telling Shelley before we came in here. I said, I kind of see her as a cross between Phoebe and Friends and Aunt B. And, you know, she's kind of like a housewife who's very sweet, but a little out there, very flaky. You know, she's probably the craziest one in the group, I would say. Some of the other characters are Deidre, who's a judge.
Yes. Yes.
Played by
Ellie Deshawn.
Stasha Case plays our sex pot. Yes. Stasha, who has a gorgeous body. So if guys are like, I'd rather watch football, well, come see Stasha in the show.
She wears extremely short skirts.
Extremely short. Brad's always saying, put your legs together.
Brad goes on Cher Patrol to make sure he can't, you know, see anything, any business.
I see.
Any girly business. And
well, it's a family. Brad has a family audience. So I can see where he'd be concerned.
He does. And, you know, you don't accidentally want to bear too much, you know. So Brad will go move around, be like, oh, I can see. I can't actually see anything. And but I could. I might think I can. And but, yes, Stasha has some extremely... My checkbook is bigger than some of the dresses that she wears. I think they're tiny
dresses.
And she wears them, you know,
beautifully,
spectacularly.
Then we have Pam Sollers.
Yes, Pam Sollers and Pam Haskin. And,
yeah, where do some of these ladies fit into the story?
Pam Haskin plays Sedalia Ellicott, who is the proprietor of Laurelton Oaks, which is an event facility. It's a grand estate sort of place where a big old house kind of thing in Virginia. And it's their hometown where they all grew up. And so Sedalia is the one who gets the wedding rolling. She's the proprietor and facilitator and corraler, wrangler, bride wrangler. She makes
bride wrangler.
She keeps
now,
the ball,
that's a good way to put it.
She keeps the ball rolling. And so there's a Monette Gentry, who is Stasha's character. She's a business owner. She owns the biggest
country music club in the entire state of Virginia.
Yes, and she's sassy. She's
has a
sassy
Harley
gal.
Tattoo.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's my daughter Christina Schaefer, who's just the sweetest.
And she's a bride through the whole thing.
Yeah,
she's the bride.
She has a little through line of giving a wedding reception speech as the bride,
where she gets drunker and drunk.
She's drinking champagne the whole time, and every time you see her, she's had a little bit more champagne, and it's very entertaining as well. So.
Is there an antagonist in this show? Are they all protagonists in trouble?
Well, they sort of become antagonists to each other
at different points,
where sometimes it is circumstance that is their protagonist and antagonist, and Sometimes it's themselves.
Does the past come back to haunt any of them? You know, I mean,
I'd say their own past.
Their own
you
past.
Know, I'd say it's that dream of, you know, the dreams you have when you're a little kid, you know, like me. Oh, I'm going to be on Broadway. And then you get there and you're like, oh, this wasn't like I imagined when I was 5 years old, you know. So it's their own dreams probably that, uh-huh. you know.
Uh-huh. It's a lot more work than
it's a lot more work. Oh, yes, exactly. And, you know, I'd say it's the same thing with these women, you know, that they sat across, one of my lines is they sat across the field and just imagine getting married in a beautiful old house, and then of course the reality of it is, you know,
then you're married.
Yeah.
that sometimes doesn't always work out like you planned.
It's a lot like Designing Women, I'd say.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
as much sarcasm.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yes. Oh, I see.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. Now we're getting good. This is what I want to get.
Yes.
We had an interesting. Brad and I had gone to see a production of it in another town. Hours away, so you wouldn't know. But we saw a dinner theater production of it because we were like, well, you know, if it's great, we'll steal it, and if it's not, we'll know what not to do. And it was a little painful. It wasn't funny. Mm. And we were like, egads. And Brad was like, oh my God, oh my goodness, oh dear, yeah. What's happening? And I was like, oh, see, I think the thing is, we don't believe that they're friends. We don't mm-hmm. believe that they love each other. Despite their little snarky comments, you have to believe that they are the best of friends. Otherwise, why in the world would you put up with their shenanigans and show up at the drop of a hat to be in somebody's wedding wearing coral? You know, why would you do that unless you were in it, you know, in it for the long haul? You uh-huh. you have to have that kind of devotion to your friends, and you have to believe that they have that relationship. So that was something that we worked on, you know, from the get-go, was these women love each other. They are great friends. They adore each other. They may say horrible things to each other, but they mean it with love. And
sure.
It's because you love each other that you can say, you know, you're a tramp, or and you're like, yeah, it's true, you know, no one gets their feelings hurt by it, you know, because they speak the truth with love. So,
yeah, you know, I'm a guy. Guys have disagreements, and mm-hmm. sometimes they slug it out,
yes.
And then things get forgotten often.
Yeah.
Is it not this way with the gals?
They do, I think.
Well, I'd say women, you know, we're sensitive, you know, and so it probably is a little bit, it takes us a little bit longer to get over a hurt, you know,
yes.
I'd say, than guys.
Sometimes
we don't slug it out.
Longer.
Yeah. But Shelley did say, I think it was our first read through of the script, and we didn't know each other, and she said, let's go out afterwards. You know, it was kind of part of our job description. You're going to have a read through, then you're going to go have some beers together,
uh-huh.
you know. Which was great.
Bonding.
And now we've been together how long? 2.5, 3 weeks? It hasn't been a long rehearsal process.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
We feel like we've known each other a long time.
We've,
you know?
And they're on stage together the
whole
time.
All the time.
So
yeah.
they sort of had baptism by fire of, if they didn't know each other, they do now.
I see.
Because they've all gotten to be friends together.
I think the writers of the script were some of the writers on the Golden Girls, weren't they?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Yeah, so it kind of has that feeling. We're a little bit younger than the Golden Girls, but I had to throw that in there. But yeah, it has that feeling of that's the sitcom, very fast pace, you know, where you mm-hmm. kind of end each other's sentences, and a lot of physical comedy, and it's a lot of fun.
We're speaking with Shelley Stewart Banks, the director, and Val Fagan, who plays Libby Ruth.
Libby Ruth.
I wrote it down real fast. In the Chestnut Fine Arts Theater production of Always a Bridesmaid, opening, do we say Thursday? The 22nd
Thursday,
would be,
yep.
This is the 19th. So Thursday, the 22nd at the Chestnut Fine Arts Center, going to run through March the 8th. So what is that? Seven weeks. Yeah, that's a pretty long run.
It
How
is.
Do you keep these gals motivated? How do you keep them away from each other's throats?
They get 3 days off.
Ah.
Yes, exactly.
Just about the time they're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to kill them. They get Sunday night, Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night off to decompress and then be ready to get back in the thing. So.
Sure. Now, this is a comedy. No yeah. songs in this? Val doesn't get to belt them out?
I do a little bit of singing,
okay.
But it's comedy singing.
I see.
You know? So it's not going to be like Patsy Cline up there, you know.
Sure.
But there's a little bit of singing.
Have
yeah.
you ever done the play where you played, I wish I could think of the name, the lady who just the sweetest lady in the world, but she couldn't sing a lick, and she bought out Carnegie Hall to do a concert.
Oh, yes.
Have you ever played that?
No, but I'd love to play that. What was that called? What was that play called?
It was a real lady. It was a real lady.
Yes,
but,
yes.
Yeah, you probably would.
Somebody out there
well.
Listening right now says they know the name of that. I mean,
Florence Foster Jenkins?
Yes, I saw it on Broadway.
Well, that was
wonderful.
The lady's name. Yeah.
Okay.
That was the lady's. Now, that would be difficult to intentionally sing
off pitch.
Yeah.
Yes. I think you have to actually have a good ear to be able to intentionally sing off pitch. I mean, in my first song, they come in and say, you sound like I sound like a, what is the line? A dead cat getting run over by a tractor or something like that. So, yeah, it's comedy singing.
Well, when I think of Elle, I think of music. So I'm glad you got to sing a little bit in the show.
Yeah, I know. The next show I'm doing with Brad, I'm going to play the banjo and the guitar.
Oh, well, that's...
So I'm back on track with the music again. I mean, I think that's one reason why I wanted to do this. Because it's so, you know, once you do musicals, you know, it's a treat to do straight plays, you know. And I was telling Shelley, it's so much fun to find a character. She kind of helped me find this character. I started out a little bit too, probably... I don't know, a little bit too Patsy Cline-ish, and then I a little bit too, hey, I'm a star. And then I had to chisel away until I found this kind of a vulnerable, fluttery mom, you know, normal, funny mom next door, you know. So Shelley helped me a lot with that, wouldn't you say?
No, okay.
Yeah. she's like, I'll take it.
Yeah, have these ladies changed much over the years? They were friends back when, and things have progressed. Have they changed much? Has one changed more than the others?
You know, I would say if there is one little story arc, it would be one of the characters eventually figures out that she doesn't need to be stinking married. That she's fine. You know, she's fine being a single girl. She likes to date. She owns her own home. She has her own business. She doesn't need to be married. And she lets go of that sort of thing that, you know, that you think you have to be married in order to be whole or real, or, you know, that there's a societal thing that says, you know, you have to be married.
Yeah. That's so what they you're say. To be. I don't know who they are.
I don't either.
I know. I was asking a girl the other day. I don't know who it was. I said, "Do you?" Because I've never been married. I've been asked. Thank God. Thank God. I've been asked, but I was never married.
Is that like, important?
Oh, it's for a girl. It's important. It's like, okay. I've been asked. Thank God. But I asked, "Is it different? Are you treated differently because you're wearing the wedding ring? Do people treat you? You know, like I don't know. Is it?
You're in a club. I guess
you're in a club." I think it'd be great to look down on your finger and say, oh, look, I'm married. Is that why you got married, Shelley?
Yes, exactly.
So you could look at your finger?
that's all I wanted. No.
Exactly.
Didn't need to be necessarily. But.
No, mostly I look at my husband now and say, oh, my gosh, we're married.
It does seem like something your parents would do.
Now, I hope it's a good thing. I hope it's not one of these, oh, what have I done?
Oh, no, it's never that. But okay, well, the story is my husband and I dated in high school.
I don't know this story either.
I don't know this,
Shelley.
Oh, well, yeah, we dated in high school for like a year. I mean, we have a silly Olin Mills picture together. It's you know, when we were 18.
And, went to the prom together?
We went to the prom. Oh, yes. You know. And so, and then, you know, we broke up, of course, because, you know, we were 18. And we went our separate ways. But every couple years or something, he would call and be like, what are you doing? And we would kind of catch up, and it was silliness. And then, you know, fast forward 30 years, and he finds me on Facebook and is like, hey, you know, I want you to come over for dinner. And I was like, okay, and then I kind of didn't leave. So we had this like 30-year history of, you know, we've known each other almost our whole lives. We just didn't decide to get married until we were old.
Sure.
So I frequently look at him and I'm like, oh my gosh, I married Chris Banks. how is that even possible? But I did.
I think it's great.
Congratulations.
Yes.
Now directing the show Always a Bridesmaid, opening this Thursday at the Chestnut Fine Arts Theater. Christina Shaver plays the lady who is the bride.
Well, she is a bride.
Okay.
They take turns being brides.
Oh, I see.
But
okay.
She has a little through line that she just does a little monologue between each scene where she's addressing her wedding attendees at the reception.
Yeah, I should ask you then about the costume. I mean, you got to come up with bridesmaids' outfits and wedding outfits.
Should we say some of our costumes? Should we let that?
Would you want to give anyone credit for doing a tremendous amount of work, probably?
Well, there was a kind of a team effort. Mm-hmm. Stasha did some of her own shopping at Viva Fashions.
Shopping. And all that. So her husband, in reality, she's married, knows what she's wearing.
Oh, yes. Okay. Oh, yes. Yes. Yes.
He'll be seeing the show 25 times.
And so she came in with her own, with some of her own things. There were some kind of specialty items, Brad took care of.
Yes.
And we won't give all of those away, but let's say they are spectacular. They are a hoot and a half. And then there were some things that were some outfits that were embellished, shall we say, to make them extraordinary in a oh my gosh kind of way. That get a laugh, you know, when they come through the door, we hope. So they make me laugh. So Pam Haskin did her own. Her character was described as wearing caftans. So she went online to the Caftans R Us store or whatever. I think it might have been Amazon. But
got caftans.
And she was like, I'm good.
Which she's a fan of now. After this play, she's like, I think I'm going to keep on wearing caftans. I like this.
They're, you know, free flowy.
Exactly.
And hang out in the caftan.
So. I see. Now, have we mentioned all the cast? The one thing you have to do is mention everybody in the cast.
Well, it's I
think we did.
Stasha Case, Ellie Deshaun, Val Fagan, of course, to my left, Christina Schaefer, Pam Haskin, and Pam Sollers. We have two Pams.
So some of them are bridesmaids, some of them are brides, mm-hmm. some of them are both.
Yes.
Is that the way it works?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
They take turns. The only one who isn't ever a bride is Val's character, Libby Ruth, but she is a mother of the bride.
I'm the mother of the bride.
Yes. She's a bridesmaid and mother of the bride. So
you have to keep all of these people in check.
Oh, yeah. Yes. There's a lot of... We have three doors, and we're always running through all of them throughout the entire show. So it's a what would you call it, a door comedy?
A little bit. A little bit of a door comedy.
So slamming doors and running around.
A lot of timing as far as the ins and outs and all that.
Yeah, you know, and comedy has its own sort of timing. You know, we've spent time working on the timing of bits, you know. Let's do this bit and just work out the timing of it.
Was that your main focus, or was it developing of the characters?
Well, I would say it's developing of the character first.
Yeah.
You know, I love a good bit. I do. I love a good, you know, let's get a comedy bit and some shtick and some shenanigans and all that. But none of that works unless you have characters. You know, you can be, anybody can slip on a banana peel, but to be funny eating a banana, that's character, you know?
I see.
So we had to, you know, the show wasn't just 100% sight gags, so we had to have this relationship with each other and have these richly drawn characters and really figure out who they were themselves and who they were in relationship to each other and their relationships with each other and when they say snarky things to each other, how do they respond? Is that I can't believe you just said that to me, or yeah, you're absolutely right.
I guess it would depend on the situation and the person.
Yeah, and to figuring out the, you know, from the audience perspective, you know, what is the thing that makes you go, oh, that's funny, versus, oh, that's mean. You know, because if you go to the, oh, that's mean place, people don't laugh for that.
No.
Unless it's really mean, and then they're like, hoo, 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 that was mean. You know, so, you know, you got to figure out there's a thing to comedy. You know, unfortunately, all these women are very good comedians, So, you know, most of my work was done for me.
Sure. Well, that makes it easier, of course. The show, Always a Bride, or Always a Bridesmaid.
Yes.
But not necessarily Never a Bride.
That's true.
That's right. Always a Bride opens on January 22nd, runs through March 8th at the Chestnut Fine Arts Center in Olathe, 234 North Chestnut Street, Olathe, Kansas. If you MapQuest things, the zip code is 66061. The number to call. For more information, it's Brad's house, so you can call anytime. You might have to leave a message. Brad, it's an interesting, we don't have time for it now, but Brad actually lives at the Chestnut Theater.
Yes, he does.
A whole other story. The area code 913-764-2121. It's in Olathe, and it opens the website. I should better get this. ChestnutFineArts.com. Lots of information. Past histories, pictures of Brad's home on there as well, on their website, chestnutfinearts.com. I want to thank my guests for being with us, director Shelley Stewart Banks, now one of the married women.
That's
true. That's right. And Val Fagan, you're going to be at the Chestnut again soon?
Yes, I'll be doing, we're doing Forbidden Broadway this summer, which is going to be a blast.
I'll bet so.
We'll be doing it, the mountain music, which is coming up right next, with some incredible, incredible music. I mean, it's going to be full on bluegrass for 2 hours, and then Forbidden Broadway this summer. But right now, it's all comedy.
All comedy, all the time
at the Chestnut Fine Arts Center, 913-764-2121. Thanks, both of you, for being with us. The Jazz Insider is next. Great jazz all afternoon. Jazz from 1 to 3, the blues from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at the Crossing the Road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you next time.